Hi, this is Robert Kirby, and when I'm not drawing my comics for the Book of Boy Trouble or Curbside, I'm listening to the fabulous, fabulous Feast of Fools podcast. Did that work?
On a day like today, when I do everything I always say I won't, when things were riding fine, I lose sight of the line between do and don't. If I'm gonna make a mistake, it's gonna be big. Why sip it if I can drink it down? Why hold it if I can pass it around and around and around and around?
Yes, people, you're listening to the Feast of Fools, the only podcast that gets into trouble with sexy results. On today's show, we'll be talking to cartoonist and writer Robert Kirby about his new book, Boy Trouble, a collection of illustrated stories by various artists about the romantic life of young gay men, unrequited love, and survival. Listen as we talk about why gay men sometimes refer to each other as boys, the internet's effect on self-publishing, and the need for a frank discussion on love and sex in gay culture. Stay tuned. I am Fausto Fernos, along with Greg Shapiro. You're listening to the music of Christopher Dahlman from his album, Race the Light. Find my way at night. So I use my hands. I grow up at the wall. If I can't trust myself, then I can't trust anyone at all. On a day like today, when I do everything I always say I won't, seems I do this every time. I disregard the line between do and don't. If I'm gonna make a mistake, it's gonna be big.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hello.
Welcome to our show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Your book is called Boy Trouble, the Book of Boy Trouble.
The Book of Boy Trouble, right.
And it's a collection of gay boy comics with new attitude
mm-hmm.
from your zine that's been around for almost as long as the Feast of Fools has.
Exactly.
Decades and decades. So you, it's safe to say that you yourself are not a boy anymore.
No, I'm a boy at heart. Let's put it that way.
And what is that exactly does that mean?
Oh, yeah, what does that mean? Well, I don't know.
Are you immature, childish, and irresponsible?
No, there's a difference between childish and childlike, and maybe I'm more childlike than childish, I like to think.
So you're like Homer Simpson?
No, I'm more like mature, but with a childlike sense of wonder. How does that fly with your...
I buy it.
Okay, cool.
Well, I think that
I'm easily sold, though.
Well, I think that works for somebody who draws, that you need to sort of have that, and draws comics or cartoons, for example. You need to be able to have that side has to come through.
Exactly.
Like, you can't be, like, stuffy or...
You have to have that sense of arrested development. I mean, childlike wonder, yeah.
Well, it's like I think about, because you're in Minneapolis, right? And Charles Schulz, wasn't Charles Schulz in...
He's from St.
Paul.
Paul.
There's,
yeah.
like, all those peanut statues around, and he kind of seems like he always had that... childlike wonder. I mean,
yeah,
it came through in the work, yeah.
But he didn't call himself like
he didn't,
because you actually refer to yourself in a sense from looking at your zine. We get a feeling that you, the illustrator, is one of the characters that you're drawing about, right?
Yeah. Well, I used to be my strip Curbside. Many of your readers, some of your listeners, might be familiar with, I don't know. I used to draw autobiographical comics, and Rob was the main character, and then I relegated him to a sidelines, and now he's kind of disappeared for the last several years.
So what motivated you in 1994 to want to start creating a zine based on comics illustrating your life and creating these kind of works?
Well, I wanted to, I think, you know, and a main thing was I really wanted to find my people. I wanted to network and collaborate with other gay boys that were doing things on, you know, the more alternative side of things, that was a real major reason for me to do it. Yeah.
And what do you think it is about doing that? That sort of expression. You know, people write poetry, they write short stories, they get up and they do performance art. What is it about? I mean, what is it about that culture of people who are doing this, committing this to paper, and not just words? I mean, there's images involved.
I mean, well, yeah. I guess really all I can say was I was weaned on comics. My parents read The New Yorker religiously, and they really loved visual art and graphic narratives, and I just grew up on it, and I also, you know, came out of the womb practically drawing. So it was just a natural thing for me to take it on.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned The New Yorker too, because there is this on the back of the book. You've got a wonderful blurb from Alison Bechdel for the book, and you know she's got her new.
And what who's Alison?
Alison Bechdel is the one who draws Dykes to Watch Out For,
which is that comic. It's actually funny about angry lesbians. Mostly.
it's so much more than that, though. Yeah,
it is.
I like the Earth Goddess black lesbian that adopted a child, and of course Alison. And it's interesting too. It's that the author puts themselves in the comics.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think that there's just a really critical aspect to what you all gay and lesbian cartoonists are doing, which is you don't see yourself represented in this genre, and so it's really important to see yourselves in it, isn't it? Or
well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, gay-oriented material in the comics form has been out there for a while, but it really became a huge niche. I mean, it's becoming a bigger niche all the time. And Allison's new graphic novel, Fun Home, made the bestseller list in the New York Times, you know, for weeks. It's a really huge hit, and it's, you know, been critically acclaimed. And
I'm sure it's probably going to make everybody's end of the year list.
So straight people are reading these books.
They are definitely. Well, they're definitely reading Fun Home, and they should be.
There's also Cancer Vixen, which is the other graphic memoir that just came out by the woman who draws just New Yorker cartoons as well. And there's definitely a queerness in that because she has a gay best friend, but. Can you say something about that sort of that trend now, the graphic memoir? You know, there's the Marjane Satrapi books and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know about that. Yeah, Persepolis.
Right, and embroidery.
I haven't read the second one, but the first one was really excellent. I really loved it.
Yeah, and she has a new one, Chicken with Plums Out. So there's this incredible, just with this year alone, a movement towards that. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think from everything I'm hearing through the grapevine is that graphic novels are the hot thing in publishing, and why it is this time, I don't know. Maybe it's just that more people have come around to it because comics are still kind of relegated to this subculture. Mm. A lot of people think of them as just being, you know, superhero type things, and they're just not. I mean, I don't really have any problem with superhero comics as you know, just in general, but when they're basically representing in most people's minds what comics are all about, there's a problem. And I do think that perception is slowly changing.
Well, it's interesting,
yeah,
too, because
you're certainly doing a good job of it, of changing
you.
That.
Yeah, because here in Chicago, Robert Rohde, who's a novelist, I think was involved in this creation of this gay superhero comic book character. I don't know if it's still around or not, but there was sort of that. And
well, we certainly have Kyle's Bed and Breakfast, which is sort of the Mary Worth of gay comics. There was one comic that we got where Kyle visits a friend to commit suicide, and we didn't run it, but
he convinces him to.
I'm just kidding.
do you have a favorite comic strip or comic illustrator?
God, there's so many. I mean, I love all the Boy Trouble Boys, actually. I mean, that's one of the things that's so fun for me doing it, is I'm just a fan of these guys.
Mm.
They're all really cool people, too.
How did you go about selecting them for the book?
Well, sometimes they selected me. a few people, Jaime Cortez, he just, after I put out the first issue, you know, I just self-published it. It was a little.
Jaime seems like a stalker kind of person who sends you stuff, and you're like, all right,
no,
I'll run
no,
it.
No. He sent. I was never even promising that I would put a second issue out, but he just sent me. He must have seen it. I think he's in San Francisco, and he liked it, and he sent me some comics, and I thought, okay, somebody's sending me unsolicited work that's good and that I'd like to publish, so I guess I'll do a second one. And after every issue, I don't know if I'm going to do another one, and then somehow we just kind of get excited about it and do it again, you know?
Well, it seems like a lot of the work that you all are doing collectively is speaking to sort of, on a very deep emotional level, to your audience.
Yeah,
it's not on a very, you know, for all you guys that are being sort of geeks in a sense, it's like you think you're
thank
being,
you.
Well, you know, it's self-labeled geeks.
Yeah.
And that you guys are sort of like very interested, you know, you claim to be very interested in literature and very cerebral, but I find it very interesting that the book is really focusing its meat on denied love, romances, and sort of the heart.
Yeah, long, like a lot of songs are stories about unrequited longing, that kind of thing, teenage crushes.
And why is that? Why is that what Boy Trouble is about? I mean,
maybe that's what, you know, there's always been a strong queer youth bent to it, and a lot of us are writing about stuff from our childhoods or from our, you know, our adolescence, I guess, and you know, gay men do not have a lot of signposts up ahead these days. It's getting better, but the society is still very much closed, and we have to kind of figure things out for ourselves. There's actually stories exactly about that issue in the new book, particularly the first story, Instruction, that D. Trevor Scott and I did. Well, he wrote it, and I drew it, and it's about a young boy on Halsted Street, and this actually used to be a performance piece that Trev did. And he goes into the back room of a notorious, I guess, sex emporium.
I know that guy, actually.
Yeah, he used to live in Chicago, actually.
I know, that's why I was like, I know these people.
Yeah. You saw him back there. But
we do know who this guy is, actually.
Yeah, totally.
This is based on real people.
Yeah, I think Trav probably very much experienced that. I mean, it seemed very real to me.
I probably ran into him.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, this is me. I didn't give him permission to write about
me. Do you see yourself in that story there?
A tiny bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
But, do you feel that sort of that gay men... Well, first one thing is that we are not seeing... I personally feel, and I don't know if you share this opinion, is that... Because we've sort of have been denied romantic relationships in our youth, that sort of we are attracted to this whole concept of boy. And a lot of people who are not gay, and you hear gay men talking about boy this and boy then, we come across as pedophiles.
Yeah, I actually was once taken to task by an editor at a paper that was interviewing me. And he asked me, well, why do you always say boy all the time?
And why do you say boy all the time?
I know. It's not very... politically correct, even though I hate saying that term.
But what does it mean? I mean, why are you
say
boy?
What does man mean? I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just like the term, and I call girls girls too. And I just think that it's saucy. I don't know. I just enjoy those terms more than man and woman. And I don't know why. Maybe that's.
So when a gay man that's in his early 30s says that I am a boy. You said earlier that it was sort of like because they're looking at the world in a way of childlike wonder.
Well, I mean, I was just being kind of
saucy.
Honestly, I can't really, you know, defend what, you know, that I say boy a lot. It's just kind of what I do. I don't know why. I certainly feel like I'm a mature adult, you know. But
well, you certainly have to be an editor of a book, you know. So.
Yeah. And Boy Trouble sounds better than Man Trouble. Doesn't that sound porno?
Yeah. Actually, I think it was the name of a really bad Jack Nicholson movie.
Yeah.
So, but you know, I mean, think about this. Boy George is 46 years old and he's still going by boy.
He's neither.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is a good question. I mean, there somebody should write a book, an academic book about it. I don't know, but I just know I just like the word boy.
Well, speaking of this kind of boy culture idea, there is this, which I came across this year at the book expo, these, I think they're manga books. I think it's called Yaoi.
Yeah.
Y-A-O-I.
Right.
And it's the Japanese books where the comic series, it's written by women.
Right.
But it always revolves around two adolescent guys getting into relationships, and now there's actually a collection of short stories based on these. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, you know, actually, it's funny. I was just at the small press expo in Bethesda, Maryland, and an Asian girl came up to me, and she was quite interested. She bought issue number 5 of Boy Trouble, and she was asking David, my co-editor, and I questions about that. And, yeah, she was asking me also, are you pro or con that? And I said, great. I said, the more people who are doing, you know, who are enveloped in queer culture and are doing positive things with it, the better, you know? I don't care who's writing him and what they're about. I think it's a very fascinating thing, though, that in Japanese culture that women do that. And I don't, again, that's another academic book in the works, or maybe it's been, they've been written already. I don't quite understand it, but I think it's great. You
know? Well, Robert, maybe it's because we're so attracted to the intense emotional... the emotional intensity of young, unrequited, gay teen love.
Yeah, I've been there.
And because we've been there, but it's sort of like, you know, it is the intenseness of teenage angst multiplied upon itself, because it's two men being sort of dancing with each other. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the attraction. It may not be because we're fascinated with youth culture, like Britney Spears or something.
Yeah. have you read these books, these yaoi books?
I read two of them, and then I just started the book of short stories based on them. And the thing that's amazing is that they are, the two that I've read, one was something, drug something, and they're not specific, they're not especially graphic. There is, mostly it's just longing, it's mooning over this other guy, the two that I've read. So
I saw one that had that when they got to have sex finally, it was very stylized, and a lot of those Japanese cutesy symbols were employed to like visualize it, but not visualize it at the same time.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So they have like butterflies fluttering around them or something.
Yeah, and little cute little those little Japanese iconic characters. I'm actually
Hello Kitty
with Japanese culture. Yeah, and. So they're just wild, actually. I really like. I'd like to read some more.
You know, it's amazing. Right now, I'm reading the McGreevy
James McGreevy's memoir. Why are you doing
the confession? Because they want me to talk. They want me to interview him. But the point of that is that I'm reading it, and the beginning really is about his experience of unrequited love, and then eventually having sex with another guy, and of course there's the whole Catholic guilt background, but I'm reading it and the whole time I'm thinking, this would have made a much more interesting graphic memoir if it had been illustrated, because it tends to be really, it's kind of dull and dragged, but if someone, you know, if he had met with you and you illustrated
Robert?
It.
If we did it for Boy Trouble, I think you're onto something. I actually love working with writers. Well, Trav is a writer, the guy who did the story about the Halsted Sex Emporium. You know, he has a couple of novels. He just won the Lambda Literary Award for Gay Male Mystery, I believe it is. So, I like working with writers a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, sort of Mark Foley would be a more appropriate.
I'm not going there.
Well, you know, it is sort of like, you know, there is a beauty in youthfulness, you know, and it's like, and there is an attraction to that.
And yet there's also a beauty in, you know, the other generations that come. There's this great scene in John Cameron Mitchell's Short Bus.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Where this pretty young, probably the youngest guy in the movie, meets up with this he's probably like in his 80s, this older man at the sex salon at Short Bus. And there's just this magic that happens. I mean, you don't, it's not one of the scenes you actually see, the sex scenes you actually see happening, but there is this sort of...
That's a shame.
Okay, I'm not going to continue.
I really want to see that movie, though.
No, I'm going to go even see it right now.
Yeah, okay, bye, guys.
Yeah. Healing out. So, you know, let's talk about sort of like your fans. Because when you first started this, it was sort of a way of reaching out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And what was sort of the response that you started getting when you put out these zines of all these unrequited, youthful angst?
But also, but let's also tell your listeners too. Like, there's a lot of funny stuff in it.
Oh, absolutely!
I don't want them to get the idea that we're just mopey, tragic goth boys.
It's good
either.
Stuff, people. Yeah. We don't put, you know. junk on the show. Just so
yeah,
you know.
Tell them to buy this book too.
Right.
Oh, they will.
Okay. Oh, they will.
I'm very tight with Google, Robert, and I'll go to their homes personally and punish them if they don't buy the book.
That's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, it's funny when I was at the Small Press Expo. I got a lot of, the different people who bought the stuff, they ranged from, like, the young Asian girl to a middle-aged lesbian to some other middle-aged guys, just kind of running the gamut. I kind of think everybody was gay there, but, I mean, I know we have some straight boy readers and straight girl readers as well.
When they meet you, do they expect for you to look like your characters, and then they go, oh, you don't have a line drawn across your face.
I actually used to hear that more when my strip curbside was autobiographical. People were disappointed I didn't have a kind of a pointy little jughead nose, which is the way I was through it for some reason.
Because you live with your boyfriend, and what is his sort of take on the stories? Is he ever like, are you writing about me?
Well, we did do one little, it's not a very gay story. It's in the Boy Trouble book. It's one of my color stories. It was basically the only new thing I was able to do for the book. The rest is reprints from early issues that are out of print. But we did a little story of one of his eBay adventures, actually, and he got a kick out of it, even though I kind of made him do it. I kind of told him to script it up for me. I like to collaborate, and I'll use anyone. Someday I'm going to collaborate with my dog, I swear to God.
Well, so what's the collaboration process been like on this book?
Oh, you mean like just with everybody?
Has it been very satisfying? Do you actually, if you're drawing something together, Is one person drawing it, or are both people trying to imitate their style?
Well, in the book, let's see, who collaborated in the book?
Well, the first one, Instruction, is a collaboration.
Yeah, Trav, that was actually a performance piece that he used to do, and I loved it, and he was a fan of Boy Trouble, and I just emailed him. At the time, I didn't know him, and asked him if I could adapt it. He was excited about it, and so we did that. David and Craig Bostick.
They
illustrated one of Craig's songs. Craig's in a band called Spoilsport, and they work just so well together, and I love the stuff they do. They're just really, like, the finished things they do are really, I hate to say it, but they're just adorable.
Are you guys drawing this together, or is one person imitating the other person's style?
Generally, it's been,
because it looks like fusion cuisine.
So. Yeah, we haven't done any like jam. A jam is where, you know, like you draw your part and then give it to the next person. I think all the collaborations in this book are people who, you know, one person wrote it, another person illustrated it. Craig and David, so far, Craig has written the pieces and David Kelly has illustrated them, but I'm sure they'll switch up. And I'd like to do more jams, you know. That's where, you know, you both or all of you work on one sheet of paper or one story together visually, which would be fun.
Well, speaking of collaboration, Steve McIsaac, who collaborates with Dale Lazarov on the Sticky erotic comic series, has a piece in the book as well, and it was interesting to see, you know, this is just him as opposed to a collaboration, so this is just Steve McIsaac on his own.
Yeah, there's actually text in this one, rather, whereas Sticky, there's none at all.
Exactly.
That works so wonderfully, actually, I think, in that book.
Definitely.
Does it bother you sometimes when you see, like, just comic books in general, it's like when they start photoshopping the text as opposed to, there's a beauty of the handwritten word.
Yeah, there's that organic quality that I prefer. I mean, if you want to go ahead and put in text, that's fine for you, but I personally prefer, like, knowing that a hand has written, that somebody has drawn, taken the time to draw and write in everything by hand.
Like the Linda Berry stuff, which...
Most of us are huge fans of hers. Yeah, because it is so personal, and her voice is so distinct. A lot of cartoonists right now are putting together a font. Like, you do it in some sort of program. You write all the text yourself, all the letters.
But then
you can, like, just kind of type it in, or I don't know exactly how you do that, but... it looks good as long as it's in your hand. I mean,
yeah, but it's like, you know,
a lot of time.
If you're a crippled, handwriting. It's like, and you know, there's something very inherent to the beauty of that. And I hate seeing, like, there was, I'm not going to say when, but you know, you all know who I'm talking about.
Oh, you, I want you to say his name, come or her name. Who is
should
it?
Should I say it?
You should say it, baby.
The mostly unfabulous life of, you know.
Ethan Green.
Ethan Green started out so well, and then he got this that sand font that's default in OS 9.
That's right. Oh, and you even know what it is in OS 9. Yes. My goodness.
And I'm like, I saw that, and I think I actually told him in person, because he came into the offices one day, and I said, you know, I really loved it when you used to draw the words by hand, because the words are just as important as the illustrations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, I'm working on a movie. Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, I'm glad you brought up the movie, because how would you feel if you were approached about having, you know, Ethan Green was adapted for film.
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel if somebody came to you and wanted to, I don't know, adapt Curbside or something else of yours for
how
film?
How would I feel? Oh, I'd say bring it on. Absolutely. I'd love it. You know, because even if it, you know, falls through in development hell, you generally, as long as it gets to development, you still get paid, you know, you make money for it. And I'm sure the end results can often be heartbreaking, but, you know, like, you know, if they turn it into a piece of junk. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have no aspiration. I haven't thought of.
So here's the James Lipton question. Who would you have play you in your own movie?
Who would I have play me? Not Same. James Lipton, sure. gosh. You know, I'd have to get back to you on that. I have.
Maybe they could even be dead. You know, Sal Mineo.
What would you want it to be?
Sal Mineo.
Would you want it to be live action, or would you want it to be actually animated?
Well, you know, actually, my second book from Cleus Press, folks, Curbside Boys. I've actually always thought that would make a good movie.
Wow.
It's a graphic novel. I mean, I always thought that would make a nice little indie film.
Wow.
Because it. And I used to cast it. I used to, when I lived in New York, I would cast the character of Drew. I mean, I would just see little Drews running around the East Village all the time, you know.
Did you ever, like, try to date, like, see people that sort of resembled the unrequited characters in your books and go, I mean, is that sort of your attraction to your boyfriend at this time? And this is a very personal question. You don't have to answer.
No, I'm all about the personal questions. No, actually, my boyfriend doesn't resemble any characters whatsoever. He's a really cute, very nice, very talented, very smart Italian fella from
Ohio.
So
are you saying that your characters aren't talented and smart?
Oh, no, they are, but I'm just since he'll obviously listen to this podcast, I want to put in a good word for Mr. John. He's
and
awesome.
I always, you know, give kudos to people who are married to artists. Because
yeah.
It's like they are having a very challenging life.
Oh, I'm telling you, yeah. He, John, I know you're listening to this right now, and thank you so much for putting up with me.
What would you say to him, like, if you were like getting legally married? Would you want to get legally married?
Would I want to get legally married?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
For the romantic, sentimental reasons of it.
Oh, I
not for the legal reasons.
Yeah, I don't know. I just. That's another one, you know, I should pull my head out of my comics and, like, think about these important issues such as using the word boy and getting married. And I want anyone who can get married, who wants to, should be able to get married.
Not for you, for you.
I think for me it would be more like just some sort of ceremony.
Mm.
And what would you say to him if you were standing on an altar right now?
Oh, I'd have to think that up. I'd have to, yeah. I'll
well, like, spontaneously. If you, like, some sort of time machine with you.
Oh, no, I just... You know, I would probably say along the lines of, you know, how important you are to me and how much I love you and that kind of thing. So,
well, you know what you said, the idea of pulling your head.
Having a Barbara Walters moment. Right?
Pulling your head out of your comics, things that are going on. I mean, this is a pretty very political year right now, political time.
Yeah. Let me tell you.
Is it work? Is that material finding its way into your work?
I am actually a very political person.
Wow.
But I'm also. I can't do more than comment on it here and there a little bit because I'm just such an angry person, and I just have never been able to channel that constructively. I've actually done some satirical comics about the gay community because I'm political about that, and that's a little easier to do, to poke fun at, like, you know, certain funnier aspects of it. But as far as like,
what is up with gay culture anyway? Like,
what,
you know,
the
whole Boys Town.
Yeah,
I mean, we create culture, Robert, you and I and Greg. Yeah. I mean, in a sense,
that's exactly what we're doing. By the way, that's what that Boy Trouble is, its own culture, exactly.
When we criticize it, we always stand outside of it, and it's sort of like, what exactly are we pointing to when we say, you know, gay people can be so stupid, you know?
But not me.
But not me. Yeah, I'm great.
I mean, what exactly are we pointing to? Is it a money thing? Is it a, like, a visibility thing? Is it, you know?
Oh, I think it's probably a million things. You just want our culture to grow up, and you want... But it's not easy. I mean, you know, think about what we grow up, you know, against. I mean, you know, things are pretty stacked up against gay people, and it's amazing that we've created what we have already, which, you know, we have a lot to be proud of, actually. Well, listen to me, that's like a real gay pride statement, but, I mean, you know, gay people are like other people. We're like everybody else. We have our flaws, you know, like everybody else, and we screw things up, and we do good works, and we're as shallow and infuriating and wonderful as anybody else can be, you know.
But and we're also still inventing our culture.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
it isn't like this.
We want it to be better than what it is,
yeah, right?
Dear
so,
God.
Spider-Woman came out as a lesbian this year.
What?
Spider-Woman, the comic character.
Oh, she came out as a lesbian?
She came out as a she was reinvented as a lesbian.
I didn't even know she was dating anybody.
You know, no, I'm sorry, it was Batwoman, sorry.
I didn't even know there was a Spider-Woman.
No, because, you know, and in Jamaican, baddie means to be gay. I don't know if they were, like, intentionally... What do you think about the sort of like what DC Comics, you know? Marvel tries to get into sort of the gay genre.
I don't really read superhero comics. If I just don't really take them.
But I mean, do your fans do they go demand like you should be more? You know.
Oh, I think you know if you go to the Prism Comics site, PrismComics.org or Prism, yeah, PrismComics.org. They cover superhero comics a lot, and I think people do editorialize and write articles on that kind of stuff. From what I understand, Marvel, from what I've heard from people like Ivan Velez Jr. who have worked for them, that they're very exploitative and not the greatest, but that was a few years ago. I don't know what the deal is now. I have a lesbian friend who works at DC Comics as an editor.
Let's talk about the internet.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that the internet has had an impact on zine culture? I mean, that's sort of where your roots are in that sort of zine culture, and then now you've got a book with a spine. That's always a good step, you know, a hard bound, yeah. Hard copy.
It's not from Kinko's.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and now, what would you say the impact has been, the internet's impact has been on that?
Well, I do think that the internet, I mean, I think underground culture is more expressed in weblogs now and YouTube and things like that. I mean, I think it's wonderful, and I'm on the internet as much as anybody else. But zines are still around. I just think that they're a little more, even more underground now, you know.
What does it mean to be underground?
Yeah, underground is basically, I guess, that you're not being represented in the mainstream media. Like, you're not. My comics aren't appearing in Time or the New Yorker. You know, they're more in the gay press and the like, and occasionally even the straight alternative press. Although they have a lot of catching up to do.
Publications are you in? How many outlets are you in?
Not a huge amount, like 6 or 7 right now. I've been really concentrating. I haven't actually been trying to get much lately, although I'm going to do that push again. It's time. You should do it every year, but I haven't been doing it. I've been working on the book, which is taking up a lot of time.
Well, the book is called Boy Trouble. It is available. It's edited by Robert Kirby and David Kelly, and it's available through our website, feastoffools.net. It is part of the F list. The Feast of Fools list. Highly recommended book you should get.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
This is one of our you know, books this year that we're recommending that you should get. Because we don't recommend every book. that we have not, on the show, just so you know this, Robert.
Oh, for real?
Yes.
Okay.
You're an Oprah's book club now.
Oh, dude.
Of gays, and, you know. So it's called the Gay La King book club.
The Gay La King.
Yes. Okay, so we're doing the breakdown. Quickly answer these questions, Robert.
Okay.
Tell us your subconscious mind. Share it. Although you already, you know, we already know the answer to 90% of this stuff. But quickly tell us in the most entertaining fashion, what is your favorite color?
Oh, geez. Oh. Okay, I'm not being very quick. My favorite color is black because it's versatile.
That's not a color.
It's not? Okay, blue because it's versatile.
Good answer.
I was hoping he'd say puce. And what is your age in relation to Larry King? Like, on the Larry King scale, are you...
Lots younger than Larry King, I hope, yeah.
Okay. What's your best feature about your body?
My best feature, I would say my blue eyes.
Oh, and what turns you on?
What turns me on? The mind.
What's your favorite type of sushi?
Oh, the eel. Unagi, I believe it is. Oh, yeah, that's the best.
And what is playing on your iPod right now, if you have one?
I don't, but I will be. I am playing a lot of Frasier Chorus.
Ooh.
And the old album by the Eurythmics, Savage, for some reason.
And what's the best thing that happened to you last year? The best thing?
Getting that book deal, that was cool.
And this year, is there something that's especially bad that's happened this year?
My dog had to get hip dysplasia surgery on both hips, and it took up the whole winter. It sucked.
Oh, wow.
And what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is, it's a toss-up between Rosemary's Baby and Ordinary People.
Oh, that's the best guy I've ever heard.
That's a good answer.
Yes. What's your favorite snack?
My favorite snack is, I would say plain Lay's potato chips.
And what was the name of your pet when you were a kid and the species?
Bucky, and he was a mixed mutt, and he was really great.
Do you play any musical instruments? And if so, what do you play?
I used to play the violin when I was a kid, and I really sucked at it, so I don't play it anymore.
If your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
Ew. It would say, I think I'm on the wrong body.
What kind of drink do you like to fix for your guests when you're entertaining?
Oh, any kind of red or white wine. I like to pour wine.
What's a good wine?
I would say Gießen Pinot Grigio, but drink it in the summer. Because it's fruity and citrusy.
Well, what's a good fall wine?
Any kind of Pinot Noir. I can't think of any ones that I'm super partial to, but that's the kind of grape I like.
And what bothers you the most about popular culture right now?
I would say how horrible movies, mainstream Hollywood movies are, that they're pandering to teenage boys, and they really need to kind of get off of that.
Do you have a favorite fat celebrity?
Fat celebrity?
Yes.
There's got to be one. I know it. Let's just say Dom DeLuise.
Oh, I love Dom DeLuise. What do you waste your money on? What's your biggest waste of money?
Oh, books, and more books.
And what gets you high?
What gets me high besides marijuana? what gets me high? Being with really good friends.
If you could be a tree, what kind of tree would you be?
Oh my gosh!
I love asking this question.
Yeah. a cherry tree. Let's say that.
Oh, that's a nice one.
And do you believe in God and or life after death?
That is evidence inconclusive. Let's just say I'm an agnostic.
Great.
Thank you so much, Robert Kirby. Kirby lives in Minneapolis.
Yes.
And I've been to Minneapolis. My partner, Mark's family's from Minneapolis. It's a lovely city.
It is a lovely city.
Has it snowed yet?
Believe it or not, it has. But it didn't stick.
And you live with your partner. What's your boyfriend's name?
John.
John, who won't be getting married anytime soon.
No. We're just really busy right now. We just don't have time.
And again, the book is called Boy Trouble.
The Book of Boy Trouble.
The Book of Boy Trouble.
Yeah.
The book is called The Book of Boy Trouble.
Yeah.
And it's featuring Anonymous Boy, David Kelly, Robert Kirby, Craig Bostick, Michael Fahey.
And many others,
including stalkers that have sent, like Jamie Cortez. I think Jamie Cortez is one of the best ones because it comes across as a sort of like compulsive, obsessive, you know? It's like, I have to draw this or I will die.
Oh. You know? We'll have to ask him, actually. Yeah.
And have you ever, just one last question I had. Mm-hmm. Have you ever, like, given your characters a happy ending and your fans just ate you alive for it?
No, I mean, I generally like my graphic novel, Curbside Boys. Certain chapters have happy endings, but at the end, I always give them, like, bittersweet.
It's like they're in love or whatever, and then one of them has to move away.
Yeah. It's like bitter, but I never end on despair or, you know, or anything like that. It's just, there's always just that... Got to give him hope, too, at the end.
Well, thank you for that.
And why is Jesus a trick-stealing bitch?
Jesus is a... Well, you saw the comic.
I know, but for the
people
listeners.
Are leaving their boyfriends left and right, according to that comic, for him, you know?
Well, hopefully that doesn't happen to anyone I know.
Yeah. or that bitch will be hearing from you.
That's right, honey. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that is all we have for the Feast of Fools today. I want to thank our guest, Greg Shapiro, and you, the listener, for listening, and also Robert Kirby. The fantastic book Boy Trouble is available on the Feast of Fools website, and that website is feastoffools.net. We want to remind you that you can comment on this show simply by going to the website and posting a comment right underneath the entry. The music that we feature today is Christopher Dahlman's This Is Calm. This is what we're listening to right now, and we began the show with the song Mistake, also available on our website for purchase, feastoffools.net. Support your independent gay voices. And also, we are selling on our website, feastoffools.net, red Feast of Fools t-shirts. A portion of the proceeds of these t-shirts go to fight AIDS in Africa and also to supporting the production costs of the Feast of Fools. And you'll look fabulous this Christmas time. It makes a wonderful Christmas present and also comes with a DVD of some of our greatest shows that are not available on the internet or anywhere else. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. Thank you. Goodbye. I'm Fausto Furnos. This is
calm. When I asked you to leave, you threw your wine at the wall, and it bled down red on white. My stomach did not turn, and I could not match your tears. I just stood there thinking, what a beautiful sight. I ride the train from Queens to Morningside. I keep my eyes straight ahead, keep my face dignified. But is this linear or a downward slide? This is home. I guess I should feel like I can't do anything, but I can't do anything at all. I can't do anything but fall down. Of my dreams, I cannot do this to myself anymore. Stay so strong, and still this is my voice. I wonder why I can't feel this. I wonder why I can't feel this. I wonder why I can't feel these questions in my throat. I don't know how. I don't know how to live, but I will learn to live, to stand, to breathe, to taste. To love.